Osho, Tao, The Pathless Path, Volume 2. Talks and extracts from the Lita Zoo, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 11.
Bhagwan, Lita Zoo was studying archery and hit the target. He sought advice from Qian Yin, who asked him, "Do you know why you hit the target?" "No, it won't do yet." He went away to practice and after 3 years again reported to Qian Yin, "Do you know why you hit the target?" "I know, it will do. Hold on to this awareness and do not lose it." This applies not only to archery, but to ruling oneself. Therefore, the sage scrutinizes not the fact of survival or ruin, but its reasons.
One of the most fundamental questions that has always faced humanity and will be always there encountering every human being that is going to be born ever is the nature of knowledge. What is real knowing? Because only through knowing one attains liberation. Only through knowing one comes to know oneself. Only through knowing the truth is revealed. Man is born in ignorance. The darkness is tremendous. Naturally, the first question that any intelligent being will ask is, how to find light? What is light? We are born in darkness, not knowing who we are. What more darkness there can be? We are not even aware who we are, from where we come, where we are going. Just somehow groping, somehow drifting. Accidental we are. We don't have yet a destiny. Unconscious we are. Yet we have not attained the light of inner being which can enlighten our path. In this darkness, if failure happens, it's natural. If in this darkness frustration happens, what more you can expect? If in this darkness only you die and never live, it seems logical. So the fundamental question is, what is the nature of knowledge? What is real knowledge? Man knows many things and yet remains ignorant. You know many things, but the fundamental is missing. As if you have made a big building and the foundation is missing. Man knows much. The knowledge has grown every day and yet deep down man remains as ignorant as ever. We must have misunderstood the very nature of knowledge. Before we enter this very symbolic and very significant parable, few things have to be understood. First, unless you know yourself, all knowing is useless. Unless you know yourself, all knowing is only pseudo knowing. You appear to know, but you don't know really. It is a deception. You know signs, you know things, you know the world, but you don't know yourself. If the knower himself is in deep darkness, all his knowledge is just superficial. It cannot be even skin deep. Scratch the man of knowledge, and soon you will find ignorance coming out of it. Just scratch a little, and his knowledge will not be of any help. You will find as ordinary and ignorant a person as any other. If you insult an Albert Einstein, he becomes as angry as anybody. If Albert Einstein fails, he feels as frustrated as anybody. If Bertrand Russell succeeds, he is as happy as anybody. There is no basic difference, because the innermost core remains the same. Bertrand Russell, of course, knows more than you. The knowledge is quantitative, but he is not more of a knower than you. The knowledge is yet not qualitative. As far as your being is concerned, he is the same as you. He has more information, but not more knowing. More information is not more knowing. More knowing does not mean necessarily more information. A Buddha may not know as much as Bertrand Russell knows. Certainly, he never knew as much as Bertrand Russell knew. But Buddha is a knower and Bertrand Russell is not. His knowledge is not about things. His knowledge is about his own being. His knowledge is not an accumulation of information. His knowledge is an explosion, inner explosion of light. That's why we call it enlightenment. He has become more aware, that is his knowing. He no more walks unalert, unattentive. If you hit him, he will not react the way an unconscious man reacts. He will respond. He will not react at all. And his response will not be because you have insulted him. His response will be out of his awareness. His response will not be mechanical. That's why I call it will not be reaction. A reaction is a mechanical thing. Anybody can push your buttons and you react mechanically. You don't have any control on your own mechanism. Somebody insults you, you are insulted. He is the master. He pushed a button and you are under his control. Somebody appreciates you and you are flowing and happy. He pushed another button. You are under his control. You can praise Buddha. You can condemn Buddha. It will not make any difference. You can go on pushing the buttons. By your pushing the buttons, Buddha does not react. He is not a machine anymore. Once he was insulted. He was passing, and many people gathered, and they insulted him very much and condemned him very much. Their anger was almost righteous, because Buddha was destroying the very foundation of this rotten culture. He was destroying the very laws that Manu has prescribed for the Hindus. He was destroying the very foundation of this class-divided society, divided into castes, varnas. He was destroying the very foundation of the ancient old sannyas, because in the ancient old days, a sannyasin means a very old man. After 75 years of age, one had to become a sannyasin. When life had already ebbed out, then one was supposed to be a sannyasin. And Buddha was initiating young people, even young children. He was destroying two basic fundamentals of Hindu society. Ashrama, four stages of life. Sannyas is the fourth stage, the last. And the four caste system, varnas, that Brahmin is the highest caste and the Sudra is the lowest, and then in between are the Vaishyas and the Kshatriyas. He was destroying that too, because he said one who knows the Brahma is a Brahmin, not by birth, but by knowing, but by being. He said that everybody is born as a Sudra, as an untouchable, the lowest. Everybody, Brahmins included. By birth, nobody is higher and nobody is lower. By birth, everybody is born like an animal. Then if you work, grow, seek and search, and refine your consciousness, then by and by, slowly you move higher. From the Sudra, you become a Vaishya. Vaishya means the businessman. A little higher, has little more values in life, thinks sometimes about music, sometimes about poetry. The Sudra is one who thinks only of the body. Eats, it sleeps, finished. Eat, drink, be merry. That is his whole circle of life. If you are doing only that, you are a Sudra, the lowest human being. Everybody is born that way. You cannot expect a small child to be interested in music and poetry and philosophy and religion. A child is born, he is a hedonist, a charvaka, a epicurean. He sleeps 18 hours, 20 hours. What more you can expect? Whenever he feels hungry, he is awake and cries and weeps and finds food and nourishment. Then again he falls asleep. Eats, drinks and sleeps. Every child is a Sudra. By and by, when you start growing new dimensions in your being, you start becoming interested in things which are not only of the body. A little of the mind, little of psychology enters in your being. You are no more just a physique. Then you are a Vaishya. Then you are moving in the bigger business of life. You are a businessman. Not a very high state, but better than the Sudra. Then comes the Kshatriya, the warriors. He becomes a little more interested into higher things. He starts searching for truth, for beauty, for love. His interest is higher than the businessman. and he is ready to stake his life. He is ready to lose his life for these higher values. He is ready to gamble. He is courageous. Courage enters in him. The businessman is not courageous. If everything goes good, he may enjoy music, he may enjoy poetry, he may sit in his home sheltered, secure, and think about God too. But he will not take much danger. He will not take risks. The warrior, the kshatriya, takes risks. He puts his life at his stake. He becomes a gambler. The businessman is never a gambler. He thinks first about the profit and he goes only so far. He takes risk, but only so far. A limited risk. And always thinks, what will be the profit? And what will be the loss? He is always worried about profit and loss. The warrior risks all. He goes deep into life. That is the third stage. And the Brahmin is the highest, who goes deepest into the mystery of life, reality, existence, who is never satisfied unless he comes to know what ultimate truth is. That is what Brahmin means. One who comes to see face to face the ultimate truth, the absolute truth. Buddha said, these are not divisions of birth. These are divisions of qualities one has to evolve. Everybody has to evolve from the Sudra and everybody has to go to the Brahmin. He described the whole structure. And he said, a sannyasin has nothing to do with age, has nothing to do how much old you are. Oldness has nothing to do with sannyas. It is not a chronological thing, because sannyas is not concerned with time, how it can be concerned with age. Sannyas is a movement into the timeless. So anybody who is ready, sometimes a child will be entering into it. Shankara entered into sannyas when he was only 9 years of age. If he had waited for the old Hindu concept, he would have never become a sannyasin, because by the 33 he was dead. And the humanity would have missed. Buddha said, whenever somebody is ready, and there are different qualities of people, different intensities, different passions, somebody is at the age of 9, so alert that few people are not so alert at the age of 90. So you cannot decide outright by the age. You have to look into the inner intensity of a person. And it is your life. If you want to risk it, it is your freedom. You have to be allowed. He allowed young people. Now these two were the foundations of the Hindu society. Both were destroyed. But he created a great revolution in human consciousness. People were against him naturally. He was always in danger. He was passing, and the village was of Brahmins. They gathered together and they insulted him very much. He listened silently. They pushed and pushed the button, but nothing happened. They were a little worried, embarrassed. When you insult somebody and he stands there unperturbed, you become embarrassed. He seems to be beyond you. In fact, you cannot reach him. He is on such a height. They ask, what are you listening? Why are you standing silently? We are insulting and condemning you. Have you gone dumb? Have you gone deaf? Can't you speak? Can't you hear what we are saying? Buddha said, I can feel, I can see your worries, your embarrassment, but I am sorry. You should have come 10 years before if you wanted me to react. Now it is too late. Now these buttons don't work. I have gone beyond. It is as if a child is playing with his toy and you snatch the toy and he cries and weeps. But one day he will not be a child. And then if you snatch his toy, he will not cry and weep. In fact, he will give it to you. He will present it to you and say, you can take it, you can have it. I am finished with it. That's what Buddha said. It is too late. I am finished with this. I am gone beyond. This is knowing, real knowing. Knowing is a qualitative change in your being. It is a transformation of your being. It is a metanoia. You move higher. The altitude changes. In knowledge, the so-called knowledge, you remain the same. Only you go on hoarding more. You know more, but you remain the same. The so-called knowledge is almost like money. You go on hoarding money. That doesn't change you. How it can change you? Your bank balance goes on growing, but that doesn't mean you are growing with it. How you can grow with the bank balance? You may start collecting much money. You may hold millions of rupees. But how that is going to help your growth? You remain the same. That's why you will see even rich people remain beggars. Money is there, but their inner beggary remains the same. They remain in the same way miser. Sometimes they turn even more miserly. Because when you don't have, you are not worried of losing it. When you have, you become worried of losing it. Rich people become more poor. Their poverty is tremendous. They cannot share. They are always afraid. Their inner poverty does not change at all. It remains the same. It has to be so. If you are aggressive, just by changing your clothes, you will not become non-aggressive. If you are an angry person, just by changing the style of your hair, you will not become non-angry. So how much money you have does not make any difference to your inner being. You remain the same. And in the same way, how much knowledge you have makes no difference. You can go to the university. You can have all the degrees possible. You can have a PhD, a D.Litt. You can visit the libraries. And you can go on reading and reading and reading and studying. And you will, of course, collect much knowledge. But it will be just on the outside, on the periphery of your mind. It will be just your memory. It will not change the quality of your consciousness. And unless your quality changes, nothing is attained. So the first thing to be understood, knowledge and knowing are different. Knowledge is information, knowing is understanding. Knowledge is gathered from the outside, knowing is a growth inside. Knowledge is borrowed, knowing is yours, authentically yours. Knowledge is learned, knowing is not learned from anybody. You have to become more alert so you can see more, so that you can feel more, so that you can be more. Knowing is being. Knowledge is just a peripheral accumulation. Another thing. When you are a man of knowledge, When you have hoarded too much knowledge, your ego will be strengthened. You will think, I know so much. And ego is one of the barriers towards reality. It is not a bridge. It disconnects. It does not connect. When you are a man of knowing, ego disappears. Because a man of knowing comes to know what you know. How you can know? Life is so mysterious, so tremendously mysterious. There is no way to know it really. If you can know only yourself, that is more than enough, more than one can expect. If a small light starts burning in your heart and your inner being becomes lighted, that is more than enough. And that is what is needed. In that light you become aware that the reality is an ultimate mystery. That's what we mean when we use the word God. God means exactly what nature means, with only one difference. In the concept of nature, it is implied that if it is not known up to now, it will be known later on. But it can be known. It is knowable. That is the intrinsic meaning in the word nature. Just few days before, one atheist was talking to me, and he said, why use the word God? Why not use nature? Just the word God creates trouble. I said, it can be used, but then you will have to become more alert what meaning you put in it. Nature means that which is known, or if not known, can be known. Theoretically is knowable. Science is nature. Because science is something we have known of it, something we are knowing, something we will know. But basically, one thing is certain, that one day everything will be known. By using God, we bring another dimension into it. We say something is known, more will be known, more will always be known, but still something will always remain unknowable. Something will go on being elusive. The mystery is vast. The mystery is infinite. And we are part of it, so how the part can know the whole totally? It is impossible. The part cannot know the whole totally. The part can only know so far. A man of knowing understands the mystery of life. That's why Buddha is silent about life. He does not say a single word about it. Lao Tzu kept quiet for his whole life. And when he was forced, really forced to write his experiences, because now he was getting old, and then he was moving towards the Himalayas, and he wanted to disappear in the Himalayas. He was prevented on the last boundary post of China, and the guards won't allow him. And they said, we have received a message from the emperor that don't allow Lao Tzu to escape outside the country unless he writes a book about his experiences. So for 3 days, on that outer post of the country, he remained in a tent and wrote the book, because he wanted to get out of the country. He wanted to go to the Himalayas and disappear. A beautiful place to die. Himalaya is really a beautiful place to die. Where you can find a better place to die and disappear into God? Nowhere. Such a godly phenomena. Watching those Himalayan peaks, that virgin snow, and the sun shining on it, as the whole world has become golden, watching that in that coolness, in that purified air, on that high altitude. What better space to die? You cannot find a better graveyard. It's tremendously beautiful. He was right, and he was in a hurry, and he was very old. So he said, okay, if you insist, I will write. But the first sentence he wrote in Tao Te Ching is, the Tao, the truth that can be said, is not the real Tao. The Tao that can be asserted, uttered, expressed, is already false. The truth cannot be said. Because you can say only things which have been really known. Known totally, known perfectly, then you can express. Truth is never known totally. You feel it. You live it. You have great experiences of it, great visions. Great mysteries open, but each mystery brings you to another mystery. Each door opens and you say 1001 doors are still there unopened. Each door brings you to new doors. So how you can express it? A man of knowing will say that I don't know. Or, I don't know the all. I know only a little bit. I know only myself. But that is enough. That is more than enough. That is the highest one can aspire to. The man of knowledge goes on claiming that he knows everything. Hence he proves his ignorance. Only an ignorant person says that he knows. The knower always says that he does not know. That is the sign, indication of real knowing. One thing more. When you know something, you divide reality. The knower, the known, and the knowledge. The reality immediately becomes divided into three things. That's the meaning of the symbol of Trinity in Christianity. If you know God, God becomes three. The moment you know, God becomes three. The one is no more one. Knowledge divides. That is the meaning of the concept of Hindu Trimurti. God has three faces. The moment you know, He has three faces. Knowledge divides. And now, physicists say that they have come to know the fundamental of life, fundamental of existence, electricity. Again, they find it is divided in three, the electron, the neutron, and the positron. It seems three is very basic. It seems if you dissolve into reality, there is one. The moment you turn over it and look at it, immediately it turns into three. Certainly, because you are separate then. That which you know is separate, and between the two is knowledge. Knower, known, and the knowledge. So knowledge divides. And that which divides cannot lead you to ultimate truth. Knowing unites. So in knowing, one does not know who is the knower and who is the known and what is knowledge. That's why knowing, a man becomes a mystic. Knowing, a man becomes one with reality. Knowing, one loses all distinctions, differences, boundaries, definitions. Knowing, one becomes indefined as reality itself. Now this parable. Li Tzu was studying archery and hit the target. He sought advice from Kuan Yin, who asked him, do you know why you hit the target? Each word has to be understood. Have the taste of the each single word, because each single word is significant. These parables are not just to reach in one stroke and forget about them. These parables were written to meditate. These are meditative devices. Li Tzu was studying archery. Now, Tao is the only religion which makes no difference between the sacred and the profane. All other religions make a distinction between the sacred and the profane. Archery is a profane art. Our swordsmanship, our cooking, our carpentry, our painting, our poetry. You cannot think Buddha painting, and you cannot think Buddha as an archer. You cannot even think Buddha as composing poetry. Mundane activities. Buddha is transcendental. Can you imagine Mahavir doing any ordinary day-to-day activity? No, he simply meditates. He remains in the purest sky. He walks on the earth, but he does not belong to the earth. He walks on the earth, but he never touches the earth. He is not an earthly being. But Tao is something very rare and extraordinary. Tao says any activity can be turned into a sacred activity, any activity whatsoever, even archery, even swordsmanship. In China and Japan, there are schools of archery and swordsmanship, but you will be puzzled. Where the archer learns archery, on the hall you will find the sign, meditation hall. People learn archery or sometimes wrestling, but the hall is known as meditation hall. What type of meditation is this? People are fighting, wrestling, learning archery. Murderous arts. What type of meditation is this? And why they call these halls meditation halls? Tao says any activity done with full awareness becomes meditation. Activity is not the real thing. How you do it, what consciousness you bring to it. You can do prayer in a very earthly way and then it becomes mundane. And you know it. If you go to the temples and listen to people's prayers, you will know it. That their prayers are not real prayers. Somebody is asking to get a lottery ticket. Somebody is asking his wife is ill. Make her well again. Somebody is saying, my son has failed, next time take care. Somebody is saying, my daughter has become very grown up and it is difficult to find a boy for her, help me. These are the prayers. Very mundane activities, very ordinary. Why do you call them prayers? What is sacred about them? Nothing seems to be sacred about them. You may be sitting in a temple, but that doesn't make much difference. If your prayer can be profane, then ordinary activities also can be sacred. That is Taoist contribution to the world. They say activity is not the real thing, but what consciousness you bring to it. For example, you may be wrestling. Now the Taoist wrestler first bows down to the opponent. The Taoist wrestler first has to bow down to the opponent and meditate on the opponent as God. as divine, not as the enemy. If he cannot meditate the enemy as God, as friend, then he is not Taoist, then it is ordinary wrestling. But if he can see the same God as he feels in himself, then wrestling is wrestling only on the surface. Deep down it has become prayer. Now, if you look from the outside, you will be very much puzzled. Two swordsmen fighting with their swords first have to look into the other's eyes, into the windows of the eyes, and have the feel of the other's being. It is exactly like my being. Then they fight, but the fight is also totally different. The fight is not aggressive. The fight is not egoistic. The fight is a play. And the wrestlers or the swordsmen are not interested in killing the others. They are not even interested in protecting themselves. They simply relax and go into a let go. Then two energies are there dancing. It is wrestling to you if you look from the outside. From the innermost, it is just a dance of two energies. It is almost a love affair. It is a meeting of two energies. And if somebody is defeated, you will be surprised. The one who is defeated is thought to be one who was not yet in a let go. He was still an egoist. That's why he is defeated. Sometimes it has happened that two Taoist wrestlers have been wrestling for years again and again and nobody was defeated because both were non-egoist. How can you defeat a non-egoist? Both were non-aggressive. Both were in such tremendous love. You cannot defeat. Two swordsmen may fight for hours and not anybody is hurt. This is the art. The whole art is to be so empty that the sword cannot cut you. When somebody hits you, you shrink. When somebody hits you, you resist. The Taoist art is when somebody hits you, you expand. You take the attack in, you absorb it. Somebody is throwing energy at you, don't fight with that energy. Absorb that energy. He is giving you energy and you are fighting with it. Absorb it. Try sometimes, somebody hits you, punches you, one day try to absorb it. Just go with it. Don't get hard. Don't become stiff. Let it be absorbed. And you will be surprised. You will be surprised because there will be a totally new experience. If two fighters are there and one fighter goes on absorbing the other's energy, whatsoever he is throwing, the one who is throwing energy will be defeated. Not that the other has defeated him, he has defeated himself. He will become weak and weak and weak and he will be defeated. And the other one will get out of too much radiance. Each activity can be turned into meditation. Even these murderous arts of archery can be turned into non-violent arts. A great revolution. The ego is hard and masculine. Tao believes in the feminine. The ego is aggressive. The feminine is receptive. Tao believes in the receptive. Tao believes become a womb. The ego, the masculine ego, is determined to penetrate rather than to be penetrated. The masculine ego is always trying to penetrate the other. Just as in sex. In everything the male ego does, there is a penetration, an effort to violate the other. And the feminine, just as in sex, so in everything, is absorbing. Have not you watched it happening every day? You may not have thought it in that way. That women are always the winners. Napoleon may be a great man outside his house, but when he comes back, then the woman may be tiny, a wisp of a woman, but then Napoleon is nothing. Then that woman dominates. Every husband is henpecked. I'm saying every. And if you can find a husband who is not henpecked, then Nobel, he is a Taoist. Then he is not masculine, that's why he is not henpecked. He is already feminine. Each husband has to be henpecked. Because the egoistic energy cannot win against the non-egoistic energy. Have not you watched it? A woman crying is more powerful. You may have all the muscles of the world. You may be just the great Muhammad Ali. But even Muhammad Ali, when his girlfriend is crying, is just, does not know what to do now. Those tears seem to be more powerful. What is the power of the tears of a woman? She is so fragile. She is so vulnerable. She is so soft. From where comes the power of the woman? Why she dominates? How she manages? Without managing. In fact, she says, I'm just dust unto your feet. And that's how she manages. She massages your feet. That's how she manages. She takes care of you. She serves you in 1001 ways. And that's how she becomes the conqueror. She never tries to penetrate you. She never tries to conquer you. That is his victory. That is her victory. She is defenseless. But still some great strength comes from some unknown source. Taoists say this is the strength of the water element. Man is like rock and the woman is like water. When the water falls on the rock disappears, becomes sand. Sooner or later, it is only a question of time. On the first contact of the water with the rock is so strong and the water is so soft. You cannot ever imagine logically that one day the water will destroy the rock and the rock will disappear as sand and the water will be still there. This is what allows you to cast the water course away. The strength of the feminine. The energy of the masculine is that of the chopper, woodcutter. Have you watched the woodcutter chopping wood? That's what is the energy of the masculine, destructive, aggressive, violent. The feminine energy is that of the surfer. The male wrestles with life rather than swimming with it. The feminine goes with it, swims with it, does not wrestle with it. The feminine is pliant and has suppleness, is more liquid. Now, if somebody is studying archery, he can study as a masculine energy. Then he will become technically expert, but will miss the deeper art of it. Lehi Tazu was studying archery and hit the target. Now this is the man's understanding. If you hit the target, you have learned the art. What more is needed? If out of hundreds you can hit the target all 100 times, 100%, what more is needed? A German professor, Harry Gill, was learning in Japan with his Zen master. He was learning archery. He became perfect. 100% perfect. Not a single target was ever missed. Naturally, he said to the master, "Now what more? Now what I have to be learning anymore here? Can I go now?" The master said, "You can go, but you have not learned even the ABC of my art." And Harry Gill says, "ABC of your art? And my target is 100% now." The master says, "Who is talking about the target? That any fool can do just by practicing. That is nothing much. Now the real thing is started. Listen, when the archer takes his bow and his arrow and aims at the target, there are three things. The archer, the most fundamental and the basic, the source, the innermost. Then the arrow, which will pass from the archer to the target. And the bull's eye, the target, the farthest away. If you hit the target, you have touched the farthest. You have touched the periphery. You have to touch the source. You can become technically expert in hitting the target, but that is not much. Not much if you are trying to get into deeper waters. You are an expert. You are a man of knowledge, but not a man of knowing. The arrow moves from you, but you don't know from what source the arrow moves, with what energy. How it moves, who is moving it, you don't know that. You don't know the archer. Archery you have studied, target you have achieved, 100% has become your aim, and 100% you have become efficient. But this is about the target. What about you? What about the archer? Has anything happened in the archer? Has your consciousness changed a little bit? No, nothing has changed. You are a technician. You are not a real artist. Taoists say the real thing is to see the source from where this aim comes, from where this aiming comes. from where this arrow takes the energy. Who it is who has succeeded? What energy? What kind of being is hidden behind you? That is the real target. If that is the target, and sometimes you even miss the outer target, nothing is wrong. It is said about a great archer in Japan that he always used to miss his targets, and he was the greatest master, and he will never was able to aim rightly. He must have been a man like me. Just a few days before, Priya has put a question I have not answered yet. She has asked, Bhagwan, can't you walk straight? Never tried. That master must have been a man like me who cannot walk straight. Must have been a drunkard. So he used to miss. Never succeeded, not for a single time in his whole life. But he was known all over Japan as the greatest master. So what was his mastery? His mastery was of a totally different kind. He has penetrated into the source. He has made the target his center. The periphery is not the point. You may succeed, you may fail, that is not the point at all. The real thing is, have you succeeded in getting centered in your being? Has that target been achieved? Now, to succeed with the outer target is masculine energy. To succeed with your inner source is feminine energy. Because to succeed with the outer source, you have to be aggressive, ambitious, concentrated, attentive, outgoing, extrovert. The arrow will be going out, will be going farther away from you. It will be moving away from your being. The arrow will be going into the world. To move into your center, one needs to be feminine, passive, inactive, non-doing, non-interfering, wu-wei, meditative. Not concentration, but meditation. Relaxation. One has to unlax oneself completely, utterly. When you are not doing anything, then you are at your center. When you are doing something, you have gone away. When you do too much, you are too much far away. Coming closer means you are dropping your activities. You are learning how to be inactive. You are learning how to be a non-doer. Herigel's master said to him that you have become a doer, perfect doer, but that is not the point. That you could have learned in Germany itself. There was no need to come to Japan. Masculine arts are available in the West. There is no problem. You can learn shooting. But if you have come to Japan to the East, then please, now you learn the real thing. Now you have to take your bow without being a doer. You have to pull your arrow without being a puller. You have to aim at the target without aiming. No tension, no effort, no doing on your part. You have to be just passive. You have to let it happen rather than doing it. Then you will be centered. Do you know the difference when you do a thing and when you let it happen? If you know the difference, then you will understand this parable. Otherwise, it will be difficult. Let me remind you, you may not have noted. Sometimes making love to your woman, you were a doer. Then you missed. Yes, there was a sexual release, but not true orgasm. Sometimes it was not a doing, you allowed it to happen. Then it was a release, certainly, but plus, it was an orgasm. You had a feeling of expansion. You became enormous and huge. You touched the very boundaries of existence. You disappeared in that moment as an ego. You were not. You pulsated from one core to another core. You pulsated in all your layers. But you were not the doer. Bring the doer in and the pulsation stops. Drop the doer and the pulsation again starts. Sometimes, swimming in a river, you started floating. Swimming is beautiful, but nothing to compare with floating. Sometimes, just lying down in the river, not even making any effort, you started floating with the river. Then you will know a totally different quality of experience. The river takes you in her arms. The river supports you. The river and you are no more enemies. There is a sort of inner connectedness. You have fallen enwrapped with the river energy. Your energy and the energy of the river are making love. There is an orgasm. Sometimes, sitting silently, doing nothing, you have become aware of a let go. And there is benediction. Sometimes looking at the stars or at the trees, suddenly it is there. You were not doing anything. These moments come to everybody's life. Unasked they come. They come only when you were not expecting. They come only when you were not. They come only, they steal in you. When your doors were open and you were relaxed. Sometimes out of nothingness and from nowhere, a great benediction comes. These moments come to everybody, but you have not observed, not noticed. These are gifts from God. They are reminders that you are in a strange land. Come back home. These are reminders. God goes on knocking on your heart again and again, whenever opportunity is there, whenever you allow. Someday, lying down in your bed, a Sunday, and you are not in any hurry to go to the office, and children are awake and rushing in the room, and the wife is preparing the tea, and the sound of the samovar, and the milkman, and the traffic by and by slowly moving outside, and you turn into your bed, and you pull your blanket again. And there is no hurry and there is nowhere to go. It is Sunday. Christianity has given only one beautiful thing to the world, the Sunday. Hinduism has no Sunday. That is the greatest contribution of Christianity. You can have a little more dreaming. You can still float into the sleep again. The vapors from the kitchen, the smell from the kitchen, the breakfast is getting ready, and you are just in a state of unlax, not tense. untense, and suddenly you feel tremendously beautiful. Life has meaning. Something flowers in you. Something unknown enters in you. These are the moments when you are feminine. Rushing to the office, you become a male. You may go for a walk on the same street from where you go every day to the office, but when you are going for a walk, you are a female. When you are going for a walk, you are not going anywhere in particular. You are just enjoying the birds in the trees and the wind and the morning sun and children laughing and children going to their schools. And you are enjoying, and you are not going in particular anywhere. You can turn from any point back home. There is no target. There is no goal. You are simply enjoying a morning walk. Then suddenly it is there, that moment of let go. Watch these moments of let go, because they are messages from God. Watch these moments of let go. Cherish them. Taste them more. Welcome them, so that they become more and more available to you. Receive the guest gratefully, so the guest starts coming more and more, more often. Tao says that the real happens only when you are in such a state of diffused relaxedness that you cannot say I am. I am means you are tense. Li Tzu was studying archery and hit the target. He sought advice from Kuan Yin, who asked him, "Do you know why you hit the target?" This Kuan Yin is a Taoist master and an archer. And Li Tzu asked him about his archery, and he said, "I have become an expert. Technically, technologically, I have attained my goal. I have hit the target." The master asked, "Do you know why you hit the target? From where? Who you are? Who is this one who has hit the target? Have you looked deep into the source of your energies? Forget the target and look at the archer. Archery you have learned. What about the archer? Now you have to learn the archer. And the processes are very different. Archery you have to learn. If you want to learn the archer, you will have to unlearn archery. By learning, you know the world. By unlearning, you know yourself. By learning, you accumulate knowledge. By unlearning, you become a knower. By learning, you hoard. By unlearning, you become mute, empty. The master asked, "Do you know why you hit the target? Why?" That's what Socrates means when he says to his disciples, "An unexamined life is not worth living. You may succeed, but still it is not worth living if it has not been examined so deeply that you know the very source of it, the very foundation of it. You see the flowers of a tree, but that is not real knowledge unless you go deep and you know the roots. The flowers depend on the roots. The flowers are nothing but the innermost core of the roots come to be expressed. The roots are carrying the poetry. the source, the juice, which will become flowers, which will become fruits, which will become leaves. And if you continually counting, go on counting the leaves and the flowers and the fruits, and never go deep into the darkness of the earth, you will never understand the tree, because the tree is in the roots. Where are the roots of the archer? You have succeeded in hitting the target, that is the flowering. But where are your roots? Do you know why you hit the target? Do you know why these flowers have bloomed? Do you know from where? From what source? The flower is the last activity, most peripheral. The roots are the seeds, is the first primary activity, most basic. The roots can exist without the flowers, but the flowers cannot exist without the roots. You can cut the flowers, another flower will come. In fact, far better flower will come. You cut the flower and the roots will take the challenge immediately, and they will send a bigger flower. They will say, let us see who wins. I had a gardener, a very rare man, a master gardener. And he used to win all the competitions in the city. Nobody was ever able to produce such big flowers, all sorts of flowers. And I asked him, what is your secret? He said, this is not my secret. I give challenge to the roots. I said, what do you mean? He said, I go on cutting flowers. I don't allow ordinary flowers to happen to the tree at all. If a tree can give 100 flowers, I allow only one. 99 I drop. I cut them immediately, because that is a wastage. And the roots get mad and mad and mad, and angrier and angrier. And then comes the biggest flower, as if all 100 flowers in one. Finally, roots win. But that is my secret. I get them mad. You can go on cutting the flower. The flower will come again. Another will be replaced. But cut the roots and the tree is gone. The master asked, do you know why you hit the target? The disciple said, without any hesitation, without waiting for a single moment, no. This is honesty. The disciple is really a disciple. Lihitasu himself, the man we are talking about all these days, he said, no. This is honesty. If I ask you, do you know who you are? Only the very, very honest will say no. The dishonest will start thinking, brooding. He will say, let me think. What are you going to think? If you know, you know. If you don't know, you don't know. What you are going to think? Thinking means you will try to manage the answers. You will try to manufacture the answers. If somebody asks you, do you know God? Have you ever said no? No. It is very difficult to find a man who can say no. And that is the man who can become a real disciple. And that is the man who can know one day. You will not say no. Somebody will say, yes, God is, I know. And somebody will say, there is no God, I know. But both know. Nobody is able to say no. The disciple said, no. A real disciple, a true disciple, authentic. The disciple has to open his heart before the master. The disciple has to be nude. He has not to hide anything. Because if you hide from the master, you will never grow. Leetazu said, no. It won't do yet. Then the master said, it won't do yet. Good, you have progressed. And your no is a good indication, but it won't do yet. You have to go far. Still you have to go far. He went away to practice, and after 3 years again reported to Kuan Yin. What he did for 3 years, he has attained his targets. What he was doing for 3 years, the parable does not say, because this is a parable to be meditated upon. A parable is one which only says few things and leaves many things without being said. So you have to meditate and fulfill the gaps. You have to find out the intervals where, and in those intervals is the real thing. What he did for 3 years, when you have hit the target, then what can you do more? He was unlearning now. Learning is finished. He has hit the target. Learning is complete. Now what else can you do? He was unlearning. Or he was turning his eyes inwards. Watch. When an archer takes the bow and the arrow in his hand, his eyes are on the target. Naturally. But what Leetazu was doing for 3 years, when he will take his bow and arrow, he will look at the target, but deep down he will look at himself. The target became secondary. The arrow of his consciousness became double arrowed. That's what Gurdjieff calls self-remembering. When you see me, you are seeing me. Your consciousness is one arrowed towards me. If you change, this can you do right now, and that will be right to understand. You are looking at me. Your eyes are arrowed at me. If you are really arrowed at me, you will forget yourself. This is a forgetfulness. Now make your consciousness double arrowed. You look at me and at the same time, simultaneously, look at yourself. Look at the looked at and look at the looker on. You are listening to me. Listen to it and always just become aware of the listener too. The talker has to be listened and the listener has to be listened to. Then your consciousness has double arrows. Right now it is one-way traffic. You look at me and you are not looking at yourself. This is a sort of self-forgetfulness. If you look at me and simultaneously become capable of looking at yourself, in that moment happens self-awareness. Buddha calls it Samyak Smriti. Kabir calls it Surati. Gurdjieff calls it self-remembering. But it is the same. What Leetazu did for 3 years in the forest, it was a harder task. First learning was simple. He was male. Now he became female. First he was trying to penetrate the target outside. Now he started moving inside, into the womb of his own being. He became feminine. Knowledge is aggression. Knowing is passivity. there are two types of minds tugged in Tao. One they call Mui, and the other they call Ui. Mui means natural, relaxed. Ui means natural, relaxed, and Ui means unnatural, tense. When you are fighting with life, you exist as Ui. When you are flowing with life, you exist as Mui. Swimming, you function as Ui. Floating, you function as Mui. When you are in a let go, it is the natural mind, in tune with the whole, in tune with Tao. Then these words singing there are not a distraction. They enrich, on the contrary. Then everything is allowed. All the doors are open. You are not resisting. You are not struggling. You simply are. That is the state of Mui. First, Li Tazu learned and created the state of Ui. Became very, very aggressive. Pointed towards the outside, extrovert, succeeded. It was ambition. Fulfilled his target. Then the master said, this is nothing, you have to go far. Then what he did for 3 years, he became Mui. He relaxed. He will sit silently and feel the let go. And by and by, he will take his arrow, his bow, and shoot the arrow in a state of let go. He will not shoot it, he will allow it to be shooted. That's difficult. He will not shoot it, he will wait for it to shoot itself. Again, Herigel. He tried with the master, but could not succeed. Then one day, desperate, he said, I don't think I will be ever able to succeed. I cannot understand what you call this Mu. It is all nonsense. Because how? The arrow can shoot itself if I don't shoot it. If I don't pull the bow, how things can happen on their own? It is impossible. If you can understand Herigel, that is the whole Western attitude. It is impossible. The master said, then you can go. Herigel said, would you give me a certificate? He said, impossible. Because you have not learned anything. Whatsoever you have learned, you could have learned anywhere else. So it is not a credit. You can go. He booked a flight, arranged, forgot all about 3 years he had been there. It was too long. Then went to say goodbye to the master. And the master was teaching other disciples. So he had to wait. He sat on the bench and the master was sitting, teaching to other disciples. And for the first time, he was in a relaxed state because now he was no more worried. He was leaving, finished. So he was no more worried. And he was no more greedy. There was no effort. He just looked. And he could see that the master is not shooting. He takes the bow in his hand. He pulls the bow in his hand. But the bow shoots itself. He could see it. It was a vision. How he missed, he could not believe. For 3 years he has been seeing the master again and again, but his own logical mind was an interference. it won't allow. He said, how it can be? He may be more expert, but how it can be that the arrow goes by itself? This morning, he could see it. Now he was relaxed. Now he was not worried about attaining anything. When you are no more in effort, in greed, in desire, you are relaxed. He rushed to the master, touched the feast. Without saying anything, he took the bow from his hand and shooted the target. And the master puts his hand on his head and he said, you have done it. And you can have the certificate. And you can still go. There is no need now to wait. Finish. You have known it. You have tasted it. Things can happen on their own. You were born. You have not managed it. You fell in love. You have not done it. Hunger comes. You eat. You feel satisfied. Thirst arises. You drink. You feel quenched. Young, old you will become. One day you will die. Everything is happening. The doer is a false illusion. Be in the state of mui. The society creates the state of ui. It makes you unnatural, tense, knowledgeable. It makes you cultivated, cultured, but it creates a hard crust around your heart. And you lose your real nature, Tao. He went away to practice and after 3 years again reported to Kuan Yin. Do you know why you hit the target? Again the same question. I know, said Li Tejo. Again simple. As simple as the first no. It is not preventive. It is not a pretension. Again, when a person pretends, he thinks. Before he says, I know, he tries to rehearsal in his mind. That's what you call thinking. The answer is without any thinking on Lehitasu's part. It is as it is. First he has said simply no. Now, exactly in the same simple and humble way, with no claim, remember, he says, I know. Many times you get too much involved in words. Upanishads say that one who says, I know, does not know. Right. But there can be a person who can say, I know, and still he knows. If you can say, I know in a simple, humble way, with no claim, then there is no problem. When Upanishads say, if a person says, I know, he does not know, the emphasis of the Upanishads here is on the I. When somebody says, I know, the emphasis is on the I is underlined. When a person really knows and says, I know, I is not underlined. No. Just a fact. How Li Tazu can say something untrue? If he knows, he knows. He has to say it. But it is not a claim. So don't get too much burden with words. Otherwise, sometimes people get too much burden with words. Now, for example, if a Vedantin reads this, he will say, he says, I know. He cannot know because the Upanishads say. Words are words. And one has to feel the innermost core of the words, the heart of the words. I say to you that Li Tazu says, I know, and he knows. And his I know means exactly the same when Upanishads say, I don't know. His I know means exactly the same. It means exactly the same as when Socrates says, I don't know a thing. By saying, I don't know a thing, Socrates is denying I. But by saying, I know as a simple fact, ordinary fact, with no claim, Li Tazu is doing even a far greater miracle. Because, listen to it, sometimes a pretender can pretend and say, I don't know, in the hope that you will think he knows. Because Upanishads say so, and Socrates says so. A pretender can say, I don't know, and hope that you will think that he is a knower, must be another Socrates. Mind is very cunning. So remember only one thing, if mind is simple, humble, and simply states the fact, that is truth, whatsoever the fact, it will do, said the master. So easily he said it will do. It is not a question what Li Tazu is saying. It is a question what Li Tazu is, the simplicity, the humbleness, the meekness of the person, the innocence of the person. When you say, I know, a subtle ego arises. Just say the word, I know, and you will feel a subtle ego is strengthening in you. The master must be looking into Li Tazu. The masters don't look at you, they look in you. They don't watch your face, they watch your heart. He must have looked into the heart when Li Tazu said, I know, just something arises there. Just something integrates, becomes ego, nothing. The space has remained untouched, working. I know, he has said, and nothing has happened inside him. The master said, it will do. Hold on to this awareness and do not lose it. It is difficult to gain the glimpse of this let go, and it is very easy to lose it. Because for centuries, for many lives, we have practiced doing. So when those moments of non-doing come, our whole practice of many lives is against them. Our whole habit is against them. Our whole mechanism is against them. Their happening is a breakthrough. And your past will struggle to close your doors again. That's why the master says, hold on to this awareness and do not lose it. This is the treasure, the kingdom of God within you. This is the treasure. To be in a relaxed state and allow God to function. Now, Li Tazu is not doing anything. Yes, he takes the bow, he takes the arrow, he aims at the target, but he is not. It is God in him. This is the state Krishna wanted in Arjuna, in Gita. This is the state. Krishna wanted Arjuna to become empty like Li Tazu, so that God can function. He wanted Arjuna to take his bow and fight the fight. If it has to be so, it has to be so. Arjuna was bringing his mind in. He was saying, how can I do it? It doesn't seem right. And Krishna was saying, who you are to think what is right and what is wrong? Leave it to God. You don't come in. You just put yourself aside. You don't stand in the way. And Arjuna was saying, how I can kill these people? It is violence. And Krishna said to him, if you don't kill, then somebody else will kill them, because I can see. They are already dead. Somebody has to become instrumental to put them into their graves, but they are dead. If you are not going to become the instrument, somebody else will become the instrument. And you will miss an opportunity of becoming an instrument. This applies not only to archery, but to ruling oneself. Therefore, the sage scrutinizes not the fact of survival or ruin, but its reasons. And this applies not only to archery, but to ruling oneself. In fact, archery is just a way in Tao and Zen to learn something about life. When somebody insults you, remember, the person who has insulted is outside you on the periphery like the target. You are deep within you, the source. And between you and the insulter extends your mind like the arrow. Now, if your mind is arrowed on the person who has insulted you, you will miss. Let it be arrowed towards the source. Rather than thinking he has insulted you, look into your own being. You must be carrying some wound. That's why you are feeling insulted. Otherwise, how anybody can insult you? If somebody calls you a fool and you feel insulted, that simply means you used to think you are very wise. Nothing else. If you yourself think that you are a fool, you will hug the person, you will say, right, exactly right, that's how I feel. Then where is the insult? If somebody says you are a thief and you feel humiliated, that simply means you have been always thinking that you are a great moralist, virtuous, this and that. And deep down, you know also that you are a thief. He has hit the soft point in your being, the fragile point. So now there are two possibilities. Either you jump on him and prove that you are not a thief, or you look inside yourself. Always go to the source. In yoga, going to the source is called pratyahara. Mahavira calls this going to the source pratikramana. Jesus calls it repent. Christians have misunderstood. Repent has nothing to do with repentance. Repent originally means return. Go back. Go inside yourself. The Greeks have the right word for it, that is metanoia. Turn into yourself. A 180 degree turn. You must have seen in some old ancient mystery books the symbol of a snake eating its own tail. That is metanoia. Go back to yourself. Rather than going to the other, go to yourself. Turn back. Let your arrow move in a circle and come back to the source from where it started. Somebody has insulted you, a turmoil arises. This is the beginning of the arrow. The arrow starts moving to the other person. It wants to hit the other person, insult the other person. Don't be deceived by it. Let it move in a circle. Let it come 180 degree turn back to you from where it started. Where you felt the turmoil, let it come back there. Look there. And this can become the key of an inner transformation. A new being is possible. archery is just a device. Taoists have devised many devices, but in all the devices, the basic thing is, the essential thing is to turn to one's own nature. Meditate on this parable and start using it in your life. First, look for moments of let go, wait for them, receive them with great welcome and rejoicing, invite them again and again, become more feminine. Second, whenever any opportunity arises, when your arrow starts moving outward, immediately remember and turn it inwards. Turn it in. Rather than turning on, turn in. Somebody insults and you are turned on. A beautiful woman passes by and you are turned on. Sex arises. Rather than turning on, turn in. A beautiful woman passing by is not the real target. You have some sexuality in you. Go to the source. Let it be a great opportunity for meditation. Transform each ordinary opportunity into meditation, and great will be the payoff. Each moment will start becoming luminous. And there is no mundane or profane activity. All activities can be turned into meditation. They have to be turned. This is my message too. Meditation has not to be something apart from life. It has to become the innermost core of it. Each activity, small, big, has to be luminous with a meditative awareness. And then you will see, each activity brings you to God. Each activity brings you to home. Each activity becomes liberation. But each activity has to fall back into the original source. The anger that arises from your being has to fall back into being itself. The sex that arises from your being has to fall back into the source itself. There, where the Alpha and the Omega meet, the beginning and the end meet, where the snake turns at its own tail and it starts eating it, you become complete, a whole circle. That's the stage of the sage. That is what sannyasa is all about. Enough for today.